Brilliant, right?
Yeah, they've found some of them below Keswick Dam. So they've gone out to the ocean and come back. So they can do it. They can do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyways, we're out of time. Thank you so much, Elisa. And we'll catch up with you again sometime later in the year to see how things are going. I always like to bring people back from all these organizations around the North State that are doing all this great work for us, protecting our water and restoring our rivers. And so hopefully we can hear from you again.
That sounds great. I look forward to it, Ron.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Elisa. And you've been listening to the North State Water Report here on 90.1 FM KZFR, community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And stay tuned next for Zephyr News.
Welcome back to Zephyr News, a weekly production of FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. Zephyr News is broadcast each Thursday evening from 7 to 7:30 p.m. This week's show features contributions from the Chico State Orion, Chico Soul, and the California Report. Segments from KZFR community members include coverage of the Chico City Council meeting by Hope Brianna Campbell, news releases by David Foose, and a segment on Chico homeless camps by Hope Brianna Campbell.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. In Chico, a new idea aimed at changing how people move around town is up for discussion. Agenda item 5.5 brings forward the possibility of launching a shared micro-mobility program, something that could introduce electric scooters or bikes as a new transportation option. The proposal is being considered by the Chico City Council. And while no final decision may be made just yet, the conversation marks an early step in exploring whether this kind of system could work in Chico. Supporters of the idea say it could offer real benefits. For one, it provides an alternative to driving, which could help ease traffic congestion and reduce parking demand in busy areas. It also aligns with broader environmental goals by offering a low-emission way to travel. City officials will need to consider where these devices can be used and how to minimize conflicts with pedestrians and vehicles. Rules around speed, helmet use, and riding zones are all likely to be part of the discussion. If Chico moves forward, the city would likely establish a permitting process for companies interested in operating here. That could include requirements for maintenance, insurance, and data sharing, so the city can monitor how the program is working and make adjustments if needed. Sean Hummer, Senior Traffic Engineer for the Public Works Department, speaks at the Chico City Council meeting.
My name is Sean Hummer, and I'm the Senior Traffic Engineer for the Public Works Department. I'm here to discuss tonight how the city could move forward with a shared micro-mobility program utilizing rental e-scooters or e-bikes. So staff is requesting direction on whether to proceed on this item, and if so, how. Today, I will discuss the process for implementing a shared micro-mobility program, if we approve one tonight. I will cover several areas that need to be addressed, including implementation, benefits, and challenges of such a program. If we pursue a shared micromobility program, the city must address four areas as required by Assembly Bill 1286. Those are liability, operations, parking, and maintenance. For insurance, AB 1286 requires that vendors carry at a minimum a policy that covers $1 million per occurrence and $5 million in aggregate. Everything else, such as how devices operate, where they park, and how they're managed, is up to the city to define. Based on staff research, an effective model is a city ordinance to establish clear rules and enforcement authority combined with a permit system for flexibility. Typical requirements for implementation would include removing downed and improperly parked devices quickly, providing designated parking areas, sharing usage data with the city, and geofencing, which is a virtual boundary utilizing GPS that triggers an action when something enters or leaves an area. For example, a scooter would not operate in the downtown plaza if that area were geofenced. A well-managed program can provide benefits such as first and last mile connectivity, especially between campus, downtown, and housing. It can reduce short car trips, helping with congestion and parking demand. It provides mobility options for residents and students, and it provides data to support transportation planning efforts. If the city proceeds, we can opt to start a limited duration pilot program, which would limit the number of devices, define service areas, and define the duration of the pilot. For example, you could specify 12 or 18 month pilot duration. This would allow the city to test the concept, collect data, and adjust or discontinue if the program doesn't perform as desired. So tonight we're seeking direction on whether to proceed and at what level.
Agenda item 5.5 is likely about gathering input and giving direction to staff. The council could ask for more research, community feedback, or draft regulations before making any final decisions. This is all part of a larger conversation about the future of transportation in Chico. As the city grows and evolves, leaders are looking at new ways to make getting around easier, safer, and more sustainable. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
You are listening to the Orion News Weekly Report, brought to you by California State University Chico, KZFR, KCSE, and KWQA Maker Radio. The reporters and editors of the Orion work tirelessly to bring you relevant, timely, and engaging news, sports, opinion, and entertainment.
Graduating seniors, along with their friends and families, join the associated students in front of Kendall Hall to pour dirt over a metal box full of memories, not to see the sun for another 50 years. Event student intern for the Office of Alumni, Avery Simpson, helped organize the event. She said the capsule includes staff and student photos, signed class t-shirts, examples of current technology, gas receipts, Greek life and club memorabilia, campus maps, and items significant to students at the time. From freshmen on their orientation tours to seniors taking their final walk around campus, the tiles in front of Kendall Hall serve as a reminder for us all to make our mark and make it last. There are nearly 300 spots on the university-level committees that need to be filled each year, but staffing issues have led to overworked members as Chico State maintains the largest shared governance in the California State University system. While many committees remain understaffed, with around 40 committees, nearly twice as many as other California State University campuses, efforts have focused on restructuring, including reducing membership demands or shifting some roles to consultants. Though no simple solution exists, fewer applications and uneven workload distribution mean that a smaller number of individuals carry much of the responsibility, raising concerns about sustainability, a lack of cost tracking, and the need to balance shared governance with realistic faculty workload.
On April the 27th, the community came to Trinity Lawn to honor the passing of Alexandra Winter. Many spoke of Winter's activism and compassion before her life was tragically cut short at 28 years old from an act of domestic violence. She was focusing on earning her degree in molecular and cellular biology. People who knew her said she made her mark as an activist for humanitarian, environmental, and voting rights. She was a student director at Community Action Volunteers in Education, where she worked on numerous projects. The vigil was organized by members of the Black Student Union, passed out purple candles, and held a moment of silence.
This past weekend, the Wildcat softball team finished off their season on senior night with a 3-1 series win against the Cal State East Bay Pioneers. Unfortunately, Chico State missed the CCAA playoffs after going 13-19 in conference play and finishing two games back from entering the postseason. Game one was a defensive battle with only one run scored. Senior Amelie Valdez for the Wildcats pitched the entire game, letting eight hits go by but not allowing any runs to cross the plate. Facing the best pitcher in the CCAA, Marissa Quintero, the Cats were able to break through in the bottom of the sixth inning and seal the game with defense in the top of the seventh. Game two was another close one, featuring two extra innings and a 3-3 tie. Heading into the bottom of the ninth inning, the Cats, with Allie Lewis in scoring position, were able to force an error off a hit from Delos Rios to take the game 4-3. Game three was a nail-biter, with the Wildcats scoring two runs early in the first. Despite the early advantage, the Cats, after losing the lead in the sixth inning, were unable to come back and lost the game 3-2. With the series win on the line, it all came down to game four. Both teams traded the lead three times by the bottom of the fourth inning, with the Wildcats coming away with a one-run lead. Cats kept this lead intact to win the series against the 12th-ranked Pioneers. Wildcat softball will return next spring for the 2027 season. These stories and much, much more can be found at theorion.com. Today's narrators are Cody Rowan, Hannah Cabral, and Josh Shannon. This week's authors include Jameson Lee Young, Maya Van Lanningham, Caden Huntley, Grace Payne, and Sean Shanks. It's been your boy Josh Shannon, signing off.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. The city of Chico is continuing its efforts to clear homeless camps along local waterways, and next up are areas along Big Chico Creek and Little Chico Creek. City crews have already been working in other parts of town, and now they're moving back to the creeks, where they say camps have been causing problems for the environment and nearby neighborhoods. Before any cleanup happens, people living in those areas are usually given a heads up, about a week's notice. During that time, outreach workers may stop by to offer help, like shelter options or other services. After that, crews come in to take down camps and clean up trash. City officials say the goal is to keep the creeks clean and safe. They've pointed to things like garbage, human waste, and fire risk as reasons for the enforcement, especially with warmer, drier weather on the way. Some advocates say clearing camps doesn't solve the bigger issue of homelessness. They say without enough places for people to go, many just end up moving to another spot nearby. There are also concerns about people losing their belongings during these cleanups, even when notice is given. People who live near these creeks have mixed feelings. Some say they're glad to see the areas being cleaned up and made safer. Others worry about what happens next and where people will go after they're moved. For now, the city plans to keep going with these cleanups along Big and Little Chico Creeks in the coming weeks. And as that happens, the conversation around how to handle homelessness in Chico is likely to keep going too. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
This is Patrice for Chico Soul. This week, an investigation into allegations that Mayor Casey Reynolds has a conflict of interest in voting on Chico downtown revitalization efforts. The Orion's report on a lawsuit filed by a former Chico State Ag Dean against the California State University Board of Trustees, and the reversal of a city council vote to hike sewer rates by a dramatic amount. In breaking news, the former mayor of Chico, Ann Schwab, filed a lawsuit against Mayor Casey Reynolds, seeking a court order that would force her to recuse herself from voting on downtown revitalization. The lawsuit alleges that Reynolds violated the Political Reform Act when voting on the Downtown Revitalization Project April 21st. Chico Soul obtained filings in Butte County Superior Court that point out that Reynolds owns a downtown business. Reynolds is the co-owner of Schubert's Ice Cream and Candy. Court documents state that without Reynolds' alleged unlawful participation, the result of the vote on the motion to move forward with the project would have passed by a vote of 3-2. A statement sent to Chico Soul by Peter Washington, Schwab's attorney, alleges that Reynolds violated the Political Reform Act. The act prohibits public officials from using their position to influence a governmental decision in which they have a financial interest. The Fair Political Practices Commission, an independent state agency, has opened an investigation into Reynolds' voting participation, prompted by allegations similar to those made in the lawsuit. As of May 1st, the FPPC had received 41 complaints about Reynolds, according to FPPC documents. In education news, Chico Soul shares a story from the Orion about a former Chico State College of Agriculture dean, Patricia Stock, filing a lawsuit against the CSU system and Chico State's president for alleged discrimination and retaliation. Stock was fired soon after Steve Perez became president of Chico State. According to court documents filed by Stock's attorneys, he fired her because she, quote, antagonized community partners, unquote. But Stock's lawyers allege members of the farm community waged a pressure campaign to remove Stock from her position. Stock had chosen an external Hispanic candidate instead of a local candidate preferred by the Butte County Farm Bureau, a nonprofit organization with faculty and staff ties to the university farm. In local news, the City Chico Council reversed the vote made in March to increase sewer rates, with council members voting in favor of presenting new options at the June 16th meeting. Vice Mayor Dale Bennett expressed his concerns about the impact rate increases will have on citizens and businesses, changing his vote from yes to no. While Councilmember Tom Van Overbeek suggested loan financing options at the May 5th meeting, Councilmember Kate Hawley opposed any proposals that would bring about debt. In election news, Tony Thurmond, the state superintendent of public instruction, says he is the first gubernatorial candidate to vote for abolishing immigration and customs enforcement. In an April 30th briefing with American Community Media, Thurmond said he is not only in favor of, quote, scrapping ICE, but he would also tax for-profit detention centers and invite young Mexicans who live near the U.S. border to attend the state's community colleges. A recent CBS poll shows Thurmond trailing the other seven major candidates, but 52% of the responding voters also said they haven't heard enough about him to decide on whether they would support him in the June primary. As the son of an immigrant mother from Panama with immigrant grandparents from Jamaica and Colombia, he told reporters he wants to be California's first Black and first Latino governor. During the briefing, he also said he supports a wealth tax on billionaires, statewide rent control, and bringing back redevelopment agencies to revitalize downtown areas. This has been Patrice for Chico Soul. Follow the latest at chicosoul.org. At chicosoul.org, you can also subscribe to our free weekly newsletter, The Little Sun, to get notified about new content and hear directly from our writers. That's chicosoul.org.
This is David Foose reporting for Zephyr News. California Governor Gavin Newsom proclaimed this week as Wildfire Preparedness Week, calling on all Californians to stay vigilant and prepared year-round. Oroville City Council meeting, scheduled for this past Tuesday evening, was canceled. The next meeting is in 2 weeks. Starting this past Monday, the City of Chico began work on the 2026 Pavement Preservation Project. The work will apply a slurry seal to extend pavement life and improve road service quality to Forest Avenue, plus local streets in the Brenda Drive, Sky Mountain Circle, and Amanda Way, Hartford Drive, Springfield Drive neighborhoods. There may be temporary delays, so plan accordingly. Next Tuesday, the city will begin work on the Ceanothus Avenue project. The work involves a full-depth reclamation from Manzanita Avenue to East Avenue. It includes sidewalk gap closures, pedestrian enhancements, and adding a dedicated northbound turn lane into Pleasant Valley High School. The City of Chico doesn't plan to begin work on the Pomona Avenue Bridge replacement project until June. However, in preparation for that work, the bridge will be fully closed to all traffic starting May 11th. That includes pedestrians and bicycles. The City of Chico Finance Office is accepting applications for the annual Utility Users Tax, or UUT, refund program. The refund program offers low-income ratepayers a refund on taxes paid for gas, electric, water, and telecommunications services. Details and an application are on the city's website and are also available on the first floor of City Hall. And finally, Paradise High School's football team's dream came true when they learned they get to travel to Lahaina, Maui in September for the first Unity Bowl, linking high school football teams from the two fire-ravaged communities. The Aaron Rodgers Fire Recovery Fund at North Valley Community Foundation will pay for the players' four-night stay in Maui, with United Airlines and Good 360 paying for their airfare. This is David Foose for Zephyr News.
California lawmakers are considering new rules for electric bikes as safety concerns grow on roads and trails. But experts say much of that data behind those concerns is misleading. Cap Radio's Gerardo Zavala went to Sacramento's American River Parkway to see what's really happening.
And this is a throttle, or does it have a throttle?
I'm joining the American River Bike Patrol for a ride along the parkway. This is my first time on an e-bike.
You go up to Sport Trail or to Turbo.
And that's John Poimru, director for the patrol. He's showing me his Class 1 e-bike.
Class 1 and 3 are pedal assist only. Class 2 is throttle. And that's the concern I have, that the kids are being sold throttle bikes and they're never pedaling. So they aren't working at all. They're just turning it up to speed and letting the bike move just like a motorcycle.
California law prohibits throttle-powered e-bikes from going more than 20 miles per hour using the motor alone. The law allows Class 1 and 3 e-bikes to assist up to 20 and 28 miles per hour, respectively. That's a problem on the trail, where the speed limit is 15 miles per hour. But depending on who you ask, e-bikes themselves may not be the biggest concern.
There's other issues we're coming across, and it's not the e-bikes, it's the e-motorcycles, totally different classification, which are not allowed on the American River Bike Trail.
Mark Piazza oversees park rangers along the trail. He says what they're seeing more often are higher-powered e-motos, as sometimes ridden by teenagers going far beyond legal speeds.
Usually they're getting out of school and they're speeding on their bike trail doing 40, and we had one doing 60 miles an hour.
Those devices are illegal on trails like this, but they're often grouped together with e-bikes. And that's where the confusion starts. Asha Weinstein Agarwal with the Mineta Transportation Institute says most crash and hospital data doesn't distinguish between different types of devices.
E-motos are absolutely a key safety concern. There is no doubt about that. What, unfortunately, we don't have enough data to really know is, are the legal e-bikes a safety concern?
But that data is shaping a growing debate at the state capitol. Several bills this year aim to address e-bike safety. Agarwal and many bike advocates say one proposal that would require registration and license plates for certain e-bikes could go too far.
I think that that is highly problematic.
Supporters say registration could help with education by requiring riders to learn the rules. But critics argue it would be difficult to enforce and could discourage people from using higher speed legal e-bikes instead of cars. If passed, that would mean big changes for riders like East Sacramento resident Thomas Vaklovic.
I just dropped off the kids, ran over here, grabbed the coffee, and just so much less traffic. And you can be so much safer with pedestrians, especially around the school.
Vaklovic says his Class 2 cargo e-bike replaces over 20 car trips a week. Other proposals take a different approach, like targeting manufacturers and sellers who market higher-powered devices as e-bikes. Agrawal says that could address the root of the problem.
I think a great number of the people who bought these devices that are not actually legal to use in California have no idea that they didn't buy a legal e-bike. You have to be a pretty diligent and determined detective to do a lot of research to figure it out in many cases.
Agrawal also says better data is critical. That means changing how law enforcement reports collisions and how hospital staff collect device information when interviewing patients. Until then, experts say all they can do is make educated guesses about which devices are causing the biggest safety risks.
Clara Faria is unlocking the door to show me around her place. It's a one-bedroom mobile home at Willow Mobile Home Park, where she's lived for nearly 30 years. When she bought it, she says she was looking for a calm place to spend the rest of her life. She's 91.
It was very wonderful, and it was so peaceful. The city used to run it.
In 2019, the park changed ownership. A property management company started running the day-to-day operations.
And now we're just, it's a constantly, constantly disaster.
Last year, things took a turn for Faria. She got a rent statement showing her monthly rent tripled, now at nearly $1,000. She's living just off her Social Security benefits.
Those people are completely bleeding us, and they don't care.
9 months later, she and other residents at the park received another rent increase notice. This time, Fadia's rent was increasing by another $100. Linda Jackson also lives at the park. When some residents got the latest rent increase, she decided to organize with her neighbors.
I said, I need five people that believe like me so that we can get these people off our backs and make it so that we can live more comfortable. And I swear to God, the next day, I had 35.
The residents have been reaching out to Harmony Communities, a property management company based in Stockton, which manages Willow. Public records identify around 100 parks associated with the company. In a 2024 interview on YouTube, co-founder Matthew Davies talked about building a mobile home park business with his dad.
I've now grown from our first mobile home park in 2004 to just about 100 parks today.
Interviews with nearly two dozen residents, tenant groups, and attorneys describe what they say is a reoccurring pattern. Harmony takes over parks, raises rents sharply, and in some cases uses aggressive tactics to push out low-income residents. A Harmony representative disputed that these cases reflect a broader pattern, calling each one unique or fact-specific and shaped by complex local regulations. Davies declined an interview for this story. A KQED analysis of public records finds that the mobile home parks are owned by individual LLCs and family trusts, whose managers and members are closely linked to Harmony Communities. Madeline Bankson is a senior housing researcher with the Private Equity Stakeholder Project, a nonprofit that tracks corporate ownership of mobile home parks. Bankson says LLCs are part of a broad industry pattern that has two benefits.
Reduces liability by creating separate business entities, and then sort of like the secret added bonus is obscuring ownership.
Public records show the Willow Mobile Home Park in San Pablo is owned by an LLC. These records also name Bruce Davies, father of the co-founder, as manager or member, and list the same mailing address as Harmony Communities headquarters.
If they're sending mail to the same place, this is probably the same owner.
Advocates and experts say that kind of opaque ownership structure can make it harder for residents to challenge decisions or for regulators to step in. In California, there's no statewide cap on how much rents can go up in mobile home parks. That's left a patchwork of protections, with some cities offering limits and others offering none. A bill moving now through the state legislature aims to reform this practice. Harmony says while they don't want to see people displaced, the financial burden of affordability challenges shouldn't fall on individual property owners, especially with park operating costs like insurance and labor rising rapidly.
Else in the public square. And by the way,
back at Willow Mobile Home Park, Faria watches TV in her living room. She says she's considered cutting her cable to save money. The uncertainty around when or if park owners will raise her rent feels like an agonizing waiting game. She tells me she asked God to take her.
Before they're trying to take me to be homeless, I will not be homeless.
In the meantime, Faria and her neighbors are fighting to get a local rent cap for mobile home parks in San Pablo on the November ballot. For the California Report, I'm Madi Bolaños in San Pablo.